Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you always every Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m. A little bit of food for thought for your day. And boy, is it a great day out there, man. I woke up yesterday, Matt, and after those rains had cleared and it was clear and all the dust in Tucson was beaten down and you could just see across the entire city like that. Like, just what a great time of year to be in the desert in southern Arizona, you know?
Indeed.
If you didn't have your windows down driving around yesterday, like, what was wrong with you? I want to, like, have you checked out in some capacity.
So refreshing.
What a great day. Yeah. And not shockingly, of course, with this great weather coming up, just about everything is happening in the next 2 weeks in Tucson. And we're going to cover large portions of that on our show today. We've got some great guests coming up. But after the next break, we're going to have Lenny Mark on. They own the Bamboo Terrace Restaurant and also owned El Chinito Gordo on Oracle Road. We're going to have Bob Hoffman coming up to talk about the Roadrunners opener. They've got a home opener this weekend. He's going to break down local hockey and how that team is going and what's going on with that one over there. But when we think about local sports, the most heartbreaking news I saw of the entire week, Matt, was about the Tucson baseball team. We had just had owners Victor Cuevas Jr. and Sr. on the show just a few weeks ago. And one of the things we talked about was the internationalness of the league and how cool it was to have a Mexican professional team playing here in Tucson. And would that be a challenge in the same way that, say, the Toronto Blue Jays were a challenge in the tax rate of players and, right, and visas and all these sort of things? And they were like, we've got this handled. And suddenly it looks in the news that we don't have this handled. And Tucson baseball team's home opener that should have been tomorrow, the 16th of October, has been canceled. Yeah. And it's looking like we may not have games for possibly a number of weeks.
I'm hoping that this is just a short-term stumble in what is going to be a long-term beautiful relationship for them and for Tucson. See, it appears that they might have assumed that one kind of visa that they had, was sufficient, but it was correct. It was the correct visa for the Mexican baseball fiesta where they're here for a limited time, not a team that's relocated and living here. So now they're kind of have to reset the clock. And although I'm sure people in the State Department, I know people in Congressman Ciscomani's office are doing their best, but there are some processes you can expedite, but that can't go faster than a certain rate when you're dealing with background checks and all that. So I think they're trying to get the right kinds of visas in order so that this can all happen.
I talked to Congressman Ciscomani about this, and they're on it. But, I mean, talk about terrible timing, right? Right in the middle of a government shutdown, and only days before your opening. Think about the concession vendors and the parking and, and the players and the season ticket holders and all of that. It reminds me of something like, oh, say the government slowing up your restaurant opening for a fire sprinkler or a parking violation when you were just ready to go. You know, it's very synonymous with these sort of things, probably even on a bigger scale, not to be dismissive about that, of course, to the Cuevas family. Like, this has to be just a really devastating blow. And it's such a bummer for local sports. Like, I just can't believe that's happening. And I see posts on social media blaming again the government, and this has something to do with ICE, and this has something to do with the federal government. And I don't think anything could be further than from
the
truth.
Thank you. I've actually corrected some people on this as the subject has come up. It is, people are jumping on this in ways that you just said about saying, well, this is Trump and anti-immigrant. It's not at all. It's just they got to get the right paperwork. And again, you have to do this stuff right, right? And it's an unfortunate mistake. But again, I keep trying to tell people, like, okay, it's a short-term stumble, okay? But I think everybody still believes that this is a great, successful, this should be a great, successful thing. Being able to sit out in the fall in weather like this in the evening when it's nice out and not 107 degrees and watch some baseball. So let's, you know, definitely look at the long term on this. Let's look at the long term benefit on this and the short term pain. It was an unfortunate error. But open arms and big welcome to this when it gets started.
Without a doubt. And of course, these games in October and early November are the good ones. This is when the weather is almost guaranteed to be awesome, right, which is exactly why we have so many outdoor events at this particular time as well, too. It's those ones in December that I'm a little worried about. As somebody that hosts outdoor events in, say, St. Philip's Plaza regularly at 7, 8, 9 p.m., it can get quite chilly and quite quickly during those hours, even if the daytime high might have been 68 or 70 degrees when that sun dips behind the mountains.
Takes the heat with it.
Oh, yeah, it does. It gets cold quick, and I could imagine a 7 p.m. opening pitch being quite chilly. And so I'm really, really disappointed for the Tucson baseball team and all of their fans, myself included, to not start to get to experience that tomorrow. And I'm really hoping and praying that we can get that together and that somebody out there in the government, maybe somebody listening, can help expedite this one, because this is not a huge immigration issue. These folks are not out there stealing professional Tucson baseball jobs. We don't have any other Tucson professional baseball jobs. This is something that would be a great for the community on both sides of the border, and looking forward to getting the Tucson baseball team going over here. Now, speaking of federal news, it does look like Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays is now beating the war drums and threatening to sue the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, if they don't swear in Adelita Grijalva. And this is one that I just can't seemingly wrap my hands around. Until they had canvassed that election, which only finished literally yesterday, right? Until they had canvassed this, like, how can you possibly swear somebody in ahead of time? I recognize that this has happened before in the past, but this, we were talking one time in the history of thousands of Congress people. At the end of the day, there is a process for this one. And you just have to let it play out. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me to holler that the voters of Congressional District 7 are underrepresented when they've been underrepresented, quite frankly, the last couple of years. How many votes were missed by our CD7 representative? And yet nobody hollered about that constituency for those couple of years and all those important votes.
Actually, one of the opinion writers actually did say, you know, maybe he should think about resigning, right? And maybe Raul Grijalva should think about resigning because his constituents are not being represented. So I think give him credit. You know, I mean, I'm not effusive in my agreement with Mr. Steller, but I think he even called it out once. But you're right. Your point is totally valid. Choices were made a long time ago that have excluded, leading to closure of a field office because there was no congressman field office in Yuma. So these people have been deprived of a place to go and get help with government services for a long time now.
Right. And I think to try to tie this in for political reasons on the Epstein thing is a little over the top right now, given that we're in a government shutdown. Adelita was elected. She's going to be the representative for CD7. And I do hope that she gets sworn in soon, because I do want to see representation for those in CD7, because quite frankly, I feel like they haven't been represented in an awful long time. Now, in the city of Tucson, speaking of responsibilities over here, the mayor's announced a safe city initiative, right? And that suddenly we're going to go out and pay more attention to safety. And that one strikes me as kind of odd too, Matt. Isn't that part of the core competencies that the city is supposed to do?
Right.
Aren't we supposed to give you roads and safety and parks in our city constitution, right? In the documents that establish what our responsibilities are. To give another restaurant analogy, this would be like if I created the hot soup compact at Union Public House and suddenly made an edict that I was only going to serve hot soup. And you would think, isn't that your job? No disrespect to a cold summer gazpacho over here once in a while, but quite frankly, I'm expecting you to serve hot soup. I'm expecting you to give me good food and service. That's my job. Sure. And just with the city of Tucson as well, too, this is your job to make our city safe every single day. This shouldn't require initiatives. It shouldn't require special treatment that happen, conveniently, right before an election coming up in three weeks.
Like as voting started.
Correct.
Like as voting,
almost the day that ballots drop.
And then they say, public safety is now a priority.
It does strike me as eerily convenient, the timing of those. And again, I'm not berating the city for taking the focus on safety. It's just something that we should have been doing all along. On the drive down here, I just saw that new Starbucks that is already closed 18 months in at Campbell and Grant. And there was already homeless encampments and tents built up in the drive-thru on the Starbucks, the one that was blocking the view of the whales. And everybody was so concerned about the whales. And now there are tents and unsheltered population living in this Starbucks over there. So hopefully we can work on that safety initiative over here, work on cleaning up things like these retail properties so that we can get more businesses, more economic opportunity, and more great things here in the city of Tucson. We're going to take a quick break to hear from some great sponsors. And we come back, we're going to talk to a couple that knows a thing or two about opening up businesses in the city of Tucson. We're going to have Lenny and Blanca Mark, the owners of Bamboo Terrace, former owners of Chinito Gordo. We're going to talk all things about opening up restaurants in the city of Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. We love talking business, a little bit of shop, local Tucson economic development, and nothing is nearer and dearer to my heart than local restaurateurs who are getting it done. And we're lucky enough to be joined right now in the KVOI studios by a couple that's doing just that, Mr. Lenny and Blanca Mark, owners of the Bamboo Terrace Restaurant. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us here on The Morning Voice today and taking part of the time out of your Wednesday to spend with us and our listeners over here. We love talking to local restaurateurs, and nearly every week I get the opportunity to talk to great local business people who are getting it done, who are hiring dozens and dozens of people who have been in business in some cases for many, many years. And quite frankly, Bamboo Terrace is one of the longest standing restaurants in Tucson right now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, Lenny?
My background, my parents started the restaurant in 1983. Prior to that, my grandparents had a restaurant, China Palace, that was on Miracle Mile. I believe that's now Oracle, but that was before Miracle Mile stretched down that path. They started it in Bamboo Terrace in 1983. I took it over, and Block and I took it over in 2012, but we've been running it many years prior to that.
So you have an extensive family history in the restaurant business then, needless to say. When you're talking your parents, your grandparents, like this goes back generations. That's amazing.
Yeah. I believe my uncle also ran China Palace. So it's been in the family. We've got several people in the restaurant business.
So what do you think is the key to the longevity of a restaurant like Bamboo Terrace? Because when you talk about being around since the Reagan administration, right, you're doing something correct over here when you make it that long.
You know, I don't really know the answer to that. We only just always ran our restaurant, and we've kind of always flown under the radar. I always preferred it that way. We didn't do a lot of advertisement. My father had done one advertisement in a trailer park in their circular. That's about the only thing we've done. And other than that, we just try to run a good business. We make relationships with our customers, spend time talking to them, get to know them.
We got to meet last year at a Shamrock food show, and it's awesome to always get to confer with other restaurateurs and share stories and you know, swap war stories and all the issues and fun that we have in our business over here. Are you telling me that you basically do zero advertising?
Word of mouth is the best way.
Wow, hey, spoken like somebody definitely not advertising on radio over here, no, right? No, that's amazing. I've always read that restaurants should spend somewhere between 2 and 3% of their gross on advertising just to help get it out there. But you're obviously an example that doesn't necessarily have to be the case to be successful. That's pretty amazing.
It was a different time back then when my parents opened the restaurant, and we've had decades to build that foundation of customers. Today's day and age, we probably do need to do that. As we had opened the other restaurant, El Chinito Gordo, and that didn't take off the same way. That's something that when we look back and reflect on that and try to look at the things that we could have done better, we were trying to do the social media advertising thing that everyone was doing, making reels and everything, and it just never took off for us. So we tried different advertisements. We did try like bus stops and other things that didn't work out.
So why don't you tell our listeners where Bamboo Terrace is located, and then we'll get into Chinito Gordo as well, too.
Bamboo Terrace is on it's the northeast corner of Ajo and Mission.
And so that's a growing part of Tucson right there on that southwest side for sure. I mean, you're seeing like just massive chain development over there. Do you have a lot more competition now than you did in years past?
Over the years, we've had different things. a Chinese restaurant opened up right across the street from us. It's not there anymore, but that was there for a time. Shortly after that, another restaurant, a buffet opened up down the road. And then there's been a few other things, some chain restaurants and other buffets had opened up. Some stayed, some went.
Buffets have had a real challenge, of course, since COVID, right? I mean, it was nearly the death of the buffet restaurants. If you recall, the entire Sweet Tomatoes chain decided to give up the ghost, as they might say, right during COVID, when suddenly people went, you can't touch a ladle lest it be sanitized and washed in some capacity. And the buffets said, we're out. Are you still doing buffets right now? And how is that business going?
We've never done a buffet ourselves. Okay. We've had lunch specials. My father always preached to have fresh food served. That was what he felt proud serving.
No, I think so as well, too. I as a full-time restaurateur, I'm not the world's biggest fan of buffets. On one level, it's expedient, and the guests can get and choose whatever they want and the size and portions that they want. But, of course, any of food sitting in a steam table for even a large number of minutes, forget hours, starts to degrade and lose some quality. It can overcook. It can get soggy. It's just not always the best representation of your product. You're sort of exchanging convenience for quality, and that's a tough balance, I think, to play.
Absolutely. And with Chinese food, we tend to put starches in it a lot, and those sitting on the steam table get pretty ugly.
Without a doubt. Now, why don't you tell us, Blanca, a little bit about your background and how you got started in the restaurant business?
I came to the United States when I was 12 years old, and I started working in a Korean and Japanese restaurant when I was in high school. So since then, I fell in love, and it's been a passion to me to be in restaurants.
So you came from Guadalajara. How did you end up going to a Japanese restaurant?
My aunt used to work in a restaurant, and that's how I got the job.
Amazing. It helps to have family connections for sure.
Correct.
And so together, you guys had decided in Tucson to open up Chinito Gordo in the location that was the former Club 21, if I remember correctly, on Oracle Road. And you guys opened. You kind of had the unfortunate run of opening right before COVID, huh? Like late 2019, if I remember correctly?
December 13th of 2019.
Oh, my goodness. So basically 3 months you had before COVID hit on a new restaurant. That's unbelievably terrible luck and timing on this.
Yes. I'm not too superstitious. Funny story about that is my father, when he opened Bamboo Terrace, they had the opportunity to open on the 13th, and he chose not to because 13 is considered bad luck. And on the other hand, 8 is considered to be very lucky to Chinese people. So he opened on the 18th. With El Chinito Gordo, we were ready to open on Friday the 13th. And I'm not that superstitious, so we went ahead and opened on Friday the 13th.
Well, I mean, Chinito Gordo made it basically until it was this summer, right? Or last
year?
Yeah,
I think we've got about maybe 5.5 years.
Which is still a pretty successful run, all things being equal, in the city of Tucson. But let's talk about that location a little bit, because you were located on Oracle Road, right? Give us a breakdown about exactly where that is and was for the listeners that don't know.
It's where the former Club 21 was at. That was at 2920 North Oracle Road. It's the intersection of Oracle and Miracle Mile.
Right, and so that's a tough location these days, right? You had a family, your grandfather, you said, had a restaurant in that neck of the woods?
Yeah, it was right down the road, right across the street from Ye Old Lantern, I believe.
Wow, okay. I know exactly where that is. Crazy, right? Like how history repeats itself, and here his grandson came back and opened, you know, within walking distance of that location. Unfortunately, Oracle and Miracle Mile has changed a bit in its constituency, like who lives there, and that's a little tougher neighborhood than it probably was a few decades ago, no?
Yeah, it's different. I had heard that there was a campaign to improve that area, so we're hoping to count on that. And I think it's definitely happening now. I think part of the thing with ECG, as we call it, is I think our timing was just a little bit too ahead. I think right now we might have had a better shot.
Well, I don't think there's any question opening Friday the 13th a couple weeks before COVID, or, you know, a few weeks there before COVID, it didn't have some effect on this one. Superstition or not, to think that a restaurant could survive that hit when you only had 3 months of experience under your belt and probably not the cash flow, the wherewithal, and again, the social media and advertising presence to let people know, and suddenly you're thrust into this takeout-only world for months and months and months. Like, that seems to be almost an insurmountable task to have survived that.
It was interesting contrast that we had two restaurants, one being Chinese and one being Mexican. The first initial hit of COVID, of course, it was hard on everybody. We had to close the restaurants down. For me, particularly, we kept our employees and we paid them, even at the times that we were closed. So once everything got back on track, certain things that were popular for takeout, like Chinese and pizza, like, they blew up. It was just a lot of business. But yeah, as far as Mexican food, that was a lot harder.
Without a doubt. A lot of competition, of course, in the Mexican space as well, too. Mm-hmm. And we'll touch on that when we come back after the break. We're going to take a quick break, a little halftime break over here from some of our local great advertisers. But you're listening to Lenny and Blanca Mark. They're the owners of Bamboo Terrace. They also own El Chinito Gordo on Oracle. We're going to have a fascinating another segment with them coming up after the break, talking all things local Tucson restaurant business on The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Don't go anywhere. Lots more coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., we bring you The Morning Voice. 5 days, five different hosts, all different viewpoints on what's going on here in the city of Tucson and Pima County. On Monday, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesday, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. On Wednesdays, you get me, a bit of food for thought, local news, restaurants with just a sprinkling of politics in there. On Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley, bringing you wonders from the University of Arizona. We are The Morning Voice. And so I've joined again for another segment by Lenny and Blanca Mark. They're the owners of Bamboo Terrace and the former owners, I guess now, of El Chinito Gordo on Oracle, which lamentably closed down earlier this year. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
I wish I could have got you on sooner when Chinito was still open so we could have been advertising for this one, because I feel like this one kind of slipped by under the radar and out of the view of a lot of Tucsonans, even though it had great reviews.
Yeah, in the 5.5 years that we were open, we built a following that really appreciated us, and that was the thing that kept us going even when it was hard. That was the hardest part, was letting our fans down.
Of course. I mean, it's heartbreaking when you think about the risk-reward relationship of putting your life savings, in many cases, on the line to open an establishment, and to have to close it down is one of the most heartbreaking days in any business person's life. But in a restaurateur's, it often can go really bad really quickly, because the expenses kind of don't stop, right? Like, they just sort of keep on coming, the insurances and the subscriptions and the rent and the fees and whatnot. Like, how many employees did you have at Chinito Gordo?
About 30, 35.
Yeah, that's a decent-sized crew over there, right, of people mm-hmm. that come to depend on you guys for work. Were you able to absorb some of them into Bamboo Terrace?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
That's amazing to have a great soft landing spot like that and be able to salvage that one in some capacity. Now, when we talk about that location on Oracle, like, do you regret going back to that spot in the city of Tucson? Like, if you could do it over again, would you pick a suburb like a Vail or a Marana or something like this, or would you go right back into the city of Tucson?
That's really open to debate. For me personally, I will never use location as an excuse for, we chose that location, we believed in it, and I've seen other restaurants that have always been in terrible locations and they've thrived. So I wouldn't personally use that. If people really like you and they get the word out on you, I think they will come.
A strong and true statement, I guess, but they always say location, location, mm-hmm. location, right? And Tucson's got a higher city sales tax. It's got a higher minimum wage right now than unincorporated Pima County. And certainly it's safe to say that a lot of the restaurants in Midtown and the downtown area are suffering from some of the crime issues from the unsheltered population as well. Did you suffer from some of that on Oracle?
We had those issues. It's things that we kind of mitigated and just continue to deal with. you know, for example, when we, before we ever opened, we were getting tagged by graffiti. And through Bamboo Terrace, I had learned when you get graffiti, you take care of it right away. If you take care of it right away, it's less incentive for them to do it again because they want to see their work. And if they know it's not going to last there, then they were less inclined to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a safe statement to make. They always talk about that broken windows theory, right? That by even letting these small infractions start to pile up, it's signaling theory for the neighborhood that things are in a decline in some capacity. There's obviously a lot of character in that Oracle and Miracle Mile area, right? When you think of Monterey Court and all those cool neon signs that Cook and Company have fixed up down the way. And even Chinito Gordo had some cool, like what we would call, I guess, grandfathered in, like non-conforming signage, right, from mm-hmm. Club 21, which is pretty neat. Like, character you can't build in a strip mall anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we Monterey Court was actually an inspiration to us. That was part of the reasoning we chose that location. Like, hey, they've made it different, and it's a nice thing to have in that area. So we thought we wanted to add to that.
No, we're big fans of Monterey Court over at Union Hospitality Group, too. We share a lot of the same bands and sometimes even same struggles as being a restaurant / live music venue and how that can be challenging sometimes, right? Because a restaurant table turns at a certain cadence. But when you've got live music, maybe those tables stay for an extra hour or two. And so when you quote somebody a wait time and they say, oh, I'd like to be outside with a view of the band, in the shade with a patio heater, and you're like, well, I have tables right now, I could seat you, but they only meet 2/3 of those requirements you put on me. Nope, we're gonna wait. Well, it's a 3-hour wait, you're horrible, you know, you don't know what you're doing. And I know they've struggled with that at Monterey Court, and we get that one as well too. But it's really fun to see local live music venues like that one pop up. And certainly that redevelopment of the police substation and that chunk of Miracle Mile, getting its lights turned back on, is a real beacon. And really, I think a blessing to see for Tucson to see that portion of the 85705 light itself up and really start coming back.
Yeah, and again, that's going with the timing. I think that we were maybe 5 years too early. development still continues in that area as we speak.
Is there something in the building now? Has somebody gone into Chinito Gordo?
Not at the moment. We're looking to lease that building.
Got it. So you guys own the building as well, too?
Mm-hmm. We were able to accomplish that in that time that we were open.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. Well, that's a positive turn on the situation for sure then. Mm-hmm. So do you have it out for lease right now? You got someone interested on the hook?
Not at the moment. I mean, there's some people that have been talking, so yeah.
That's great. I'm sure you'd love to get a tenant in that one in some capacity. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this also could be something you could open up again in another year or two. I do think you were cursed, quite frankly, with the timing, not just because of the Friday the 13th thing, like you mentioned. I mean, that's just a tough run of it, no, Blanca? I mean, I can't even imagine what you went through opening up a restaurant and having that happen inside of 3 months.
Yeah, it was tough, you know, to see your passion, your love for something and just not see it grow. But still trying to believe that something positive or good can happen out of this. And just seeing your employees, you know, just your daily routine, and kind of makes you feel that, you know, you're not the only one out there, you know, but you're trying your best no matter what.
I agree. So let's talk about that name Chinito Gordo over here. So I'm sitting across from the two of you right now, and you're of Mexican heritage and Lenny is of Chinese heritage. Like, and let's talk about the name. Is there a relationship here between El Chinito Gordo and Lenny sitting here in front of me?
Yes, of course. He said that he loved my food so much that, you know, he got chubby. So we kind of, the name became from that. So just nice to see that, you know, he loved my food.
Right. I love that. I think that's super cute. Do you think that was confusing, though, for the concept? Do you think, like, people walked in expecting Chinese food, especially because you guys are the owners of Bamboo Terrace, a Chinese restaurant? Like, could that have been a misnomer in some capacity?
Yeah. I mean, we get that. You know, sometimes people were thinking, like, oh, it's a Chinese restaurant, especially because of Bamboo, like you said. But even though the sign said Mexican food underneath, it's still, you know, people had the hope of Chinese food.
Without a doubt, I could see where that could certainly be confusing, even though I think it's a pretty cute name over here, and I get where you're coming from on that name. That's pretty awesome. So do you guys have future plans? You think there's other restaurants that you could or would open up in the future? Are you going to stick with the family heritage over here at Bamboo Terrace and run with that for a while?
going from two restaurants through COVID, that was so hard that once we had closed down El Chinito Gordo and we went back to having one, it became much easier, manageable, and kind of enjoying that at the moment. We want to take some time to recover emotionally, mentally, and then we have some ideas that we're thinking about.
I think that there could be lots of great spaces for bamboo terrace type concepts, or maybe even quick service when it comes to Chinese food, because there's so many products that don't travel well to go, right? We learned, and I'm sure you learned as well too, in the COVID era when suddenly everything got put into a styrofoam box and steamed out for 27 minutes in the back of one of your neighbor's Toyota Camry before it got to you. Like, certain food quality just doesn't hold up well. But Chinese food in general has been a pretty great takeout concept for years and years. There really may be some way to tie in a sort of salad and go of Chinese, an Angie's Prime Grill, a Chinito's Prime Grill over here in some capacity, and make a speedy to-go concept that was really focused on efficiency work. I think that there's a market for that, probably even more so than full service, given the labor market in Arizona. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've been thinking about a lot of different things. No guarantees. I mean, you know, maybe a day comes that you may see El Chinito Gordo.
Love it. You heard that one here first on KVOI. Let's take a quick break here from some of the local people that help make AM radio possible. Our great sponsors over there. We've got one more segment with Lenny and Blanca Mark from Bamboo Terrace coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to the final segment of the first hour of The Morning Voice. We are joined live in the KVOI studios by Mr. Lenny and Mrs. Blanca Mark. They're the owners of Bamboo Terrace. And Blanca was telling me at the break, in 2 days, you got an anniversary coming up over here at the restaurant. How many years?
42.
42 years awesome. In the restaurant business, guys. Like, that is amazing.
It is.
Like, how many restaurants can you think of that have survived 4+ decades here in the Old Pueblo?
Not too many.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, you're thinking of like, restaurants that closed just down the street from you guys, La Paria Suiza, mm-hmm. as well, too, like, closed basically, like, right around the same time that your restaurant, El Chinito Gordo, closed as well, too, right? Yeah.
Club 21 that we took over, that we were there since, I think, 42.
It's kind of terrible to think that we've lost so many of these big institutions like that over just the last few years here in Tucson. I feel like COVID really shook a lot of people out of the business, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my heart breaks for Cafe Poca Cosa. I miss that place so much.
Yeah, you see, the little one just closed as well, mm-hmm. too, in the last couple of weeks, which was really sad to see. That was, of course, their sort of fast casual version of Poca Cosa. That was a great downtown lunch location. And one of my favorites, because she was sort of like the old soup Nazi from Seinfeld. You know, she would say, you know, if you don't like the music, like, tough luck. I'm gonna turn it up louder because that's the way I like it. And by the way, credit cards? Nope. We're just cash. Like, these are on my terms. And you're going to come to the restaurant. I'm going to give you great food and great service, but on the way that I want it to be. And if you don't like it, you can go pound sand. And I always appreciated that bravado. I'm not brave enough to do that to our guests over at Union Hospitality Group by any means. I'm a real wuss when it comes to that. But it was always interesting to see somebody that could do that. And they were around for decades and decades too. It's just heartbreaking. What advice, as someone that's made it 42 years in the restaurant business, what advice would you give to budding young restaurateurs, people that are looking to get in this industry today in 2025?
From our perspective, I've always looked at it as there's at least three major things that you need to do with the restaurant. You have to have a good atmosphere, good food, and good service. And you don't always have to have all three, but you have to have at least two of the three.
That makes sense. Blanca, you got any advice for budding young restaurateurs, entrepreneurs listening out there on KVOI?
Pretty much the same, and just love and have passion for what you do. You know, otherwise, don't do it.
Agreed. Well, you guys obviously have done something right to make it over 4 decades. That's one of the most impressive runs in Tucson restaurant history, quite frankly.
Yeah, we love it. You know, we have seen our employees start high school and then have families and generations. You know, it's just nice to see people that you love just go to the next thing and develop. Great.
It's one of the things that I really worry about, this death of full service restaurants, is that we're losing out on the hostess and the busboy and these entry level customer service jobs that help our youth develop those soft skill sets in life, right? The way to greet somebody properly and look them in the eye, to shake a man's hand with a firm grip, to be able to even talk your way out of problems, right? Tableside, like, hey, grandma's been waiting 27 minutes for her pork chop and it just burned and we've got to start another one from scratch. Go stall and be likable right now. Go, right? Like those sort of skill sets eventually capacitate you to do just about any job on earth. And it, to me, one of my favorite parts about the restaurant business is watching our youth develop and grow. Taking somebody from being a scrawny little busboy or hostess that is introverted and won't look somebody in the eye and not very gregarious and not very outgoing, and turning them into somebody that is very, you know, outgoing and outspoken and very amicable. And those sort of skill sets are going away right at a time that we're going into a Zoom economy where everything is just over screens and over pushing buttons on an app. And it really worries me about America's youth.
Absolutely. We've been worrying about that for a while, and we kind of see it happening.
Yeah.
The business model has changed a lot for many new restaurants now. Now a lot of people go up to the counter, take a number, and then go sit down.
It really pains me to lose so many full service restaurants, and it's of course all kind of a function of this minimum wage as well too that's been ticking up since 2016 on the front of house side. We've just got a couple minutes here left in the segment, and I wanted to ask you guys a question I ask all kinds of our local restaurateurs over here. What are your favorite places? When Lenny and Blanca go out to dinner, give me your local date night favorites. Where are you guys going?
Oh boy. I mean, Tucson is loaded with restaurants that we love, and we really do spread it around everywhere. We've loved Mosaic Cafe forever. We've loved Minidito forever. American Eats a great place to go get a variety of things. Shout out to Queen Sheba out there on 22nd and Wilmot.
Yeah.
Love that. It's a beautiful family and they're just making an honest living and making delicious foods. We love all of the restaurants over at the Union area.
Thank you. I was not baiting that question over there.
Oh, no, I know.
We do appreciate it, though.
No, one of my best memories is there. A friend of mine was struggling, and we went there for New Year's Eve, and it started snowing, and you know, we're having our drinks and our food, and it was one of my best memories.
That was about 10 years ago. I remember that night, actually, when it snowed on New Year's Eve.
Yep.
That's funny. You were there. I appreciate that. Thanks for spending part of your New Year's with us over at Union Hospitality Group.
One of the best memories.
And we appreciate you guys spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice. You got any favorite local restaurants here, Blanca?
Oh, pretty much the same. Pretty much the same.
I love it. Well, we appreciate you guys taking the time out of your Wednesday to share your story with us. 42 years at Bamboo Terrace is an amazing, amazing feat and something you guys should be really proud of. And I personally thought that the Chinito Gordo was an amazing concept and a cool building with a lot of local history there. And the fact that you guys still own that building leads me to believe you could do something pretty cool there. Like, I got to think in 2026, it might be a lot easier to open up a restaurant than it was on Friday the 13th, just a few weeks before COVID. Again, I'm not Nostradamus over here, but I gotta think that would be a far more profitable venture. And I just appreciate you taking the time to come join us on the show and talk about your experiences.
Thank you so much. We love everything you're doing for the community and local businesses.
Thanks. We love you guys, and thanks for being awesome local restaurateurs and coming on the show over here. We've got a great next hour coming up after this break on The Morning Voice. We're going to talk about some more local restaurants openings and closings. I got a couple big closing news to break with you. We're going to have Bob Hoffman, the president of the Tucson Roadrunners, coming up. You know how I love local hockey and local sports, and so we're going to talk about that sports team. Their home opener is this Saturday night against the evil Calgary team, and so we're looking forward to having that conversation with Bob. So don't go anywhere. An exciting hour two of The Morning Voice coming up after the break.
Stop by at Bamboo Terrace. It's at the northeast corner of Mission and Ajo. Bamboo Terrace. Tell them you heard about it on The Morning Voice.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. So many things going on in the Old Pueblo this week, I can't even believe it. It's like everybody times their events at just about the exact same time over
they
here.
Do. Man. Can we talk a little bit about football?
Absolutely.
Congratulations, my man. You are the part of the ownership, local, I might add, local ownership team of the Indoor Football League's Tucson Sugar Skulls. Way to go, man.
Thank you very much, Matt. I really appreciate that. Like, we're really...
You and Katarina.
We're very excited for the opportunity to help invest in this one. You know I'm a big fan of local sports. I probably wax a little too long for some of the listeners about that sometimes, but hey, it's our show.
Yeah.
We get to do that. And I think it's really important to have events like this in our community, right? We've lamented for decades about losing spring training and what a mistake Tucson made and have, you know, bludgeoned our city officials for years over this kind of stuff, that it's on us as the private sector to make these things happen as well too, right? The government isn't going to do it for you. Would you even really want a government-run football team? You know, I don't want a government-run grocery store. I don't want a government-run football team or baseball team or any of that. And so it's on us in the private sector to do so. And when the chance came that the Sugar Skulls may leave Tucson for greener or pastures or maybe greener AstroTurf pastures out there, we thought to ourselves, you know what, guys, we've got to get together and figure out a way to save this team and keep them here local in Tucson and make something happen. And the neat part about the Skull schedule is that it runs from basically the end of March until August. And so you've got a schedule that doesn't conflict with U of A basketball. It doesn't conflict with U of A football. It gives you something to do in the summertime. These are air-conditioned games at the TCC.
Indeed.
And so we're going to bring on, you know, new ownership and some new life and create some new game day experiences and hopefully just make the TCC an absolute party for those games. And I'm hoping that everybody will lean into the Sugar Skulls as a locally owned Tucson team that's really helping make something happen here in Tucson. And so hopefully everyone will get out there and support. Season ticket sales, of course, went on sale as well, yesterday. You can Indeed. Go to TucsonSugarSkulls.com and take a peek at those packages. And so we'll be looking for lots of sponsors to buy out those suites and fill up the TCC.
And you even introduced us to their brand new coach, Rayshon Kaiser.
Yep.
last week on this very show.
We're excited for Coach Kaiser. I'm going to bring on some other local restaurants to help sponsor and feed the teams. We've been doing it for years, sort of under the radar at Union Hospitality Group, to feed the opposing teams meals as part of a sponsorship essentially to help out local sports. And now we're stepping up in an even bigger way. And I'm hoping that this will be impactful and make awesome things happen here in Tucson, particularly at a time of year from April through August that there isn't that much awesomeness always going on.
Right.
Because right now, this weekend, it hardly looks like Tucson needs any help, right? We had family weekend from the U of A last weekend. It was happening.
Yeah.
It was great. The rain, of course, we love rain here in the desert. It was a bit of bummer for the outdoor venues and a bit of bummer for the University of Arizona football team.
Little pause.
Second weather delay.
Little pause after the first quarter, yeah.
Gosh, talk about bad luck. Yeah. Like, to have, you know, a city that barely rains and two of, like, your four home football games have already had pretty massive rainouts.
Right.
That one is unfortunate for sure. But, like, everything is going on this weekend, and I mean absolutely everything. Tucson, meet yourself this weekend downtown Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's going to be over 40 food vendors that are calling it Tucson Eat Yourself, which I find a pretty interesting,
Indeed. You
know, statement over there. The city of Tucson, by the way, is announcing a new logo today as well, too. Visit Tucson's got a meeting. I haven't seen it yet. I understand from insiders that the name is just going to be Tucson. It's not going to be Vamos Tucson or something like that. It's just going to be Tucson, but a new logo behind Tucson as well, too. So we're going to be eager to see what that one looks like and what those fonts look like and what they've been coming up with and cooking at Visit Tucson. But Tucson, meet yourself all weekend downtown. Lots of fun things happening. Five different stages and 40 different food vendors. So get out there and support. Unfortunately, to get into the negative side of things, we've got the news in just the last 24 hours of two downtown businesses closing. Thunder Bacon Burger announced it's closing yesterday. And so that's Chef Lindy Riley, alumni, of course, of this particular show and longtime Tucson restaurateur. Lindy's on 4th Avenue.
Loved what he was doing there, too. And I'm sure some of that translates over to Lindy's, his reborn Lindy's on 4th.
There's no question that he's most likely looking to consolidate and bring things back to his namesake restaurant, which he reacquired earlier this year. And of course, I think they had significant challenges across from the Ronstadt Bus Center as well. A process that just continues to hurt downtown. Its location at absolutely ground zero at one of the most important corners in all of Tucson provides so many challenges to local businesses. And if you read Lindy's Facebook post, I won't get into all the gory details, but he kind of beats up on that one as well too, as part of the reasons for their decisions to leave their downtown location and focus on Fourth Avenue. And as well on Congress, right next to the Rialto, the Good Oak Bar announced its closing. Good Oak Bar is literally right next to the Rialto, the right of it, if you're looking south on Congress over there. And they announced their closing just yesterday on social media after a 10-year run. However, having met with owner Don Martin of that building, I believe there's going to be a significant redevelopment of that corner, including the former Proper space that is currently Proper Shops, Jaime's Pizzeria, Good Oak. I think we're going to see a rebirth of that one. And while I'm certainly sad to hear of any local restaurant or bar closing, I think in the long term, this one's going to come out rosy and in a project that will be bigger and grander than what the original Good Oak and even Jaime's as it stands right now. And I won't say anything more about that one, but let's just say I think you're going to want to watch the news on the restaurant development of what's going to be popping up over there, because it's going to be pretty cool. I was coming down Campbell yesterday. I saw the vertical walls went up for Shake Shack. And so that is actually going vertical at this point. And that's at basically the south west corner of Campbell and Fort Lowell. So we're going to get our first Shake Shack popping up over there and a second one coming on the east side. Reviews are great right now of La Rosa, the live music venue thus far that opened up, did their soft opening with Drew Cooper last Wednesday and started their concerts. And if you look at the pictures on their social media, gosh, is that a cool looking venue with the old Benedictine monastery and the lights and whatnot. Like I haven't had a chance to go and hear the acoustics yet myself, but I have to imagine that with David Slew at the helm over there, they're going to have something special and a really, really neat venue for
I'll tell you what, I always remember Cowboy Junkies, one of their early albums was recorded in a desanctified church, you know, and I think one of Joe Jackson's albums might have been recorded in a former church, I think, but the opportunities for acoustics are really fascinating.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to...
Some of these were designed for that as well, too. And so I have a feeling with a modern sound system and something that just historically was designed for it, it could be really cool. So I'm excited to go check out La Rosa. Do take a look at their social media and their websites for upcoming shows at Tucson's newest live music venue. We've only got a couple home football games left for you to go attend out there. That's going to be November 8th, noon against Kansas, and then November 22nd against Baylor. So if you have not yet experienced the new tailgate and live music concert part with the Bear Down Bash, you got two more chances to go take a peek at that. I don't know if Bustos Media's got another remote popping up over there or not, Matt.
I don't think so, but it's worthwhile stopping in for the music and whoever happens to be at the Bear Down Bash that week. We had a great time there. Thank you for stopping by and saying hi to some listeners a couple of weeks ago. We had KVOI and our sister stations. We all had a wonderful, wonderful time there.
Love it. Good times for all. And only two opportunities to check out those home games over there. This weekend as well, too, the Rito Downs has got the Boots in the Park Festival, a country music concert this Saturday, the 18th. Of course, the Celtic music or the Celtic Festival coming up the following weekend.
Yeah,
we had the treasurer of the Celtic Festival on a few weeks back. And so that's coming the following weekend. So the Rito is going to have some back-to-back action for outdoor stuff, which is pretty awesome. We've also got on the 25th as well, too, the Dolores de Alma Gala. That's the Hispanic Chamber's Hispanic Businesswoman of the Year. And we had her on, of course, Jackie Lappin, a couple of weeks ago as well, too. And so for those that want to have a little more upscale event and celebrate Hispanic culture and Hispanic business, do check out that one through the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. That event is on the 25th. 5th at Casino del Sol. The Greek Festival is coming up on Friday, November 14th, followed up by the Dusk Music Festival on the same stage, the 15th and 16th, Giacome Plaza, downtown Tucson. So absolutely a lot of things are happening over here in Tucson.
So I mean, you and Mrs. Kruger are probably going to make at least an obligatory stop by the Greek Festival.
Without a doubt. It will be more than an obligatory stop. Katerina's shop, Cleo, will have an outpost out there.
Being the master of understatement there,
Yes, yes. See, very excited to help support St. Demetrios Church and help them fundraise to create a new church for them. They bought a property, of course, at the River and Alvernon location just north of the JCC. And while it's helped with their church operations, it's just six sort of modular buildings right now. The idea is, of course, to build, you know, a proper Greek church and have it east-facing and all the things that you would expect in Orthodoxy. And so this is their first soiree into the Greek Festival in a number of years in what was a really well-loved Tucson festival and dance and was by far the church's biggest fundraiser of the year. And so I love seeing that one come back. And it's been great to see their partnership with Dusk Music Festival because they're going to get to use that awesome stage and sound and lighting setup for Dusk for the Greek Festival. And so that's going to be downtown. Basically, both of those from the 14th to the 16th of November. So bookmark those in your calendars. That's less than a month away for those keeping score at home. But speaking of keeping score, we are going to bring back, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to bring on Bob Hoffman. He's the president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Our home opener of the Roadrunners is coming up this weekend. That's right. The Roadrunners are going up against the evil Calgary Wranglers this Saturday at the TCC. There's a game at Sunday at 4 o'clock as well, too, at the TCC. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have a fascinating conversation about the puck with Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners, and we come back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. It is a glorious October day out there in the Old Pueblo. It is getting chilly. I had to use the seat heaters on the way to work this morning, man. Just a little bit over there. As I said, I'm a bit of a wuss. But when this weather starts to get chilly, it gets me thinking about hockey season. It is coming up over here. Both the NHL and AHL have started their seasons. And we're lucky enough to have on the line right now Mr. Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Grant. How are you today?
I am well. Yourself? It is a great day out there, huh?
It's famous. I love your talk there about it getting cold and getting the seat warmers on because it's funny. You know, I was telling people as we were starting to get obviously back in an engagement with fans and everyone's getting excited for the season starting and our opening night here right on the horizon. But, you know, it's like the hand warmers, to get the scarf, the hats, you're going to need it. I was in the arena several times, numerous times over the past week and a half, and it is cold. It is chilly. So be ready. Don't come in shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops, which always strikes me in the desert for people that maybe aren't as aware of hockey and what the elements are. And coming in, you always watch those people shiver and have to, you know, I guess a good thing, head to the merch stand and have to buy a pullover or something. But it's awesome to, you know, have that built-in air conditioning, get the weather going here, and it's now truly hockey season.
So this is Matt. Are there seat warmers on the Zamboni?
There are not, man. He's a trooper. He dresses warm, gets the pullover, the gloves. He's got everything there. But no, he's out there in the elements on his own. He's in trouble. Maybe there's a little heat coming from the engine of the motor of the Zamboni.
There we go. I always love the idea that you get to go get dressed up in like full winter regalia to go to a hockey game because it really is necessary. Like, it's no joke. You bring your family in summer attire and flip flops, and it's chilly.
Well, the true veterans, those are the ones you can look out into the crowd there, and they've got their fleece blankets, they've got those hand warmers that you can buy, and they're holding them. I mean, they're there. And plus, I'm a firm believer. I believe the TCC and at the arena there has the best hot chocolate in the country. So if you do ever need to have a little bit of a hit there, go ahead and you know, you have to wait in line a little, but grab a spot and get that hot chocolate, and you'll be feeling great.
Looking forward to hot chocolate this weekend. The home openers this Saturday night, right?
Yep, absolutely. We're ready to go. Started out on the road for a couple of games, but now all the focus, all the attention, and really it has been for many weeks here. We want to put on a great show each and every night, but the home opener is always special. And certainly heading into this year being our 10th season here in Tucson, it's really exciting to, you know, share this with our fans, share it with all of our partners. It's going to be an absolute awesome night, and I can't wait for it to get here. I just sent a note out to the staff here a few minutes ago telling them, you know, three more sleeps. So we get it. We get through it. It's like Christmas for us.
Without a doubt. And Christmas is coming up not just on Saturday, but there's a game on Sunday afternoon for those that can't make Saturday, because goodness gracious, is there a lot of things going on Saturday today or this week as well, too. Oh, I've lost you there. Bob, you there? I may have lost Mr. Hoffman over here for just a brief second.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you got it. Sorry, I lost the volume on you there. Hey, so I was saying that there's a lot going on Tucson on Saturday with Tucson Meet Yourself and the Arizona football team. It happens to be playing mercifully for you guys, too, in the morning, right? It's a 9 a.m. game, so you've got no excuse not to be at the TCC this Saturday. And if you can't make it, there's a game on Sunday afternoon, right?
Nope, there is. Absolutely. We've got, you know, for this Saturday night's game, it's funny, in October, there's always so many things going on in Tucson. So we do always challenge with that, but we're, you know, fans always do come out, which is great. And, you know, we play six games in the month of October here on home ice. So a very heavy dose of home hockey to start off the schedule, which is a good thing because hopefully we can establish ourselves as a solid team, use that energy from the crowd to get the guys going on the ice and hopefully get our record together, get things going.
You've got nearly 5,000 tickets sold at least right now for Saturday. Like, do you think we could get close to a sellout out there at the TCC?
I'm certainly hoping. I'm calling everyone I know and making sure that they're coming to the game. If you've ever been to a Roadrunners game, you've ever been a part of this journey for the last 9 years, you don't want to miss this. Celebrating 10 years in Tucson and wanting to make sure we put a great show on and put our best foot forward for Saturday. So, you know, we are getting close. There are limited seats, which is always a good problem to have, but still plenty for people to sit with their friends, their family, good group sizes of rows together that you're able to kind of come out and get where you want to get. But it is selling really well for Saturday, and Sunday's been steady too, which is nice to see. I think opening weekend, even going up against the NFL, always has its challenges, but I think people are excited to see hockey and see this team play.
I know we're excited in the old Pueblo to have the season come back over here. You guys opened up on the road, so we've had a couple games now against the Ontario Reign. Tell us about how the season started so far.
Yeah, good start for us. I mean, Ontario is a very skilled team. They have a great team on paper. They were solid last year getting into the postseason, like we made the playoffs as well. So it was a really good test for the crew. And we came back with some goals on Friday night, winning in overtime 5-4, and then struggled a little bit on Sunday in game two, went up against one of the LA Kings' top goaltending prospects. And it happens sometimes to where a goalie absolutely could steal a game. In the second half of that game, we played really well early, just couldn't get one past him. And then in the second half of that game, he took over and put on a show. So we come back 1-1, and if we can split every set of games on the road like that, we're going to be in a really good spot.
So for those that don't know, the Tucson Roadrunners are the AHL minor team for the Utah Hockey Club, right, that now has a name as of last season?
That's correct. Yeah, they finally have an identity outside of the Utah Hockey Club and the Utah Mammoth. We'll be wearing throughout the season this year special 10th anniversary jerseys that have that Mammoth logo, the tusks up on our shoulders. So you'll be able to kind of get a look at that logo and see the identity that they're establishing up there in Utah. Their home opener is actually tonight. So they started on the road as well with three games and now come home to start tonight. And several of our guys that, we expect to spend a good chunk of time down here in Tucson were fortunate enough to make that opening day roster and have been playing up there with them, including our leading scorer from last year, Kyler Yamamoto, and one of our top goal scorers, and Andrew Agazino. So, it's been fun to watch them up there, and we've had to adapt a little bit, and it's given some guys the opportunity down here to start the season and get a little more ice time than maybe what was anticipated due to the way the rosters have shaken out so far.
How did that adaptation work for you guys last year, having been the minor franchise for Phoenix? It was probably a lot easier when you sent somebody up. It just meant to drive up I-10, just, an hour and some change. And now sending somebody up is Salt Lake City. Has that been a real challenge?
You know, it certainly had some differences to it. As you said, it's not as simple anymore as just putting somebody in a car and getting them up to play a game maybe that night or even get into practice that morning. There's a little bit more logistical challenges that come into place. But, you know, all in all, the process has been very good. We had the opportunity to be able to see a lot of our guys get up into the National Hockey League last year. So it was fun to see that advancement continue. You know, from an operational standpoint, we're working with, you know, many of the same people that were with the Coyotes as that entire hockey operations team essentially just transferred over to the new ownership group and went to Utah, including, you know, the general manager, Bill Armstrong, and John Ferguson, who is our general manager and the assistant GM of Utah. So that's made it very seamless in that process and connecting. And we're fortunate enough, too, to maintain the same head coach that we had and that sale and the Coyotes leaving Arizona didn't, change that hockey operation crew either, because the culture that's been established here, you know, from our head coach, Steve Potvin, to our players is one that really, cultivates their growth, their development, and celebrates that step to the next level and getting to the National Hockey League. So we're excited to still have Steve in the mix, and he does great things with us and has done, I think, the best job in the American Hockey League in developing players.
We're excited just to have the Tucson Roadrunners still here. 10 seasons of the Roadrunners. Over 1.1 million fans have walked through those turnstiles at the TCC to come check out the Roadrunners. And you, my listeners, should go do that either this Saturday or Sunday. Tickets are still available, right, Bob?
Yep, absolutely. Limited number for Saturday, but still plenty of time to grab some. I expect to see a ton of movement in the next 3 days on that. And hopefully we get close to being able to tip it over to a sellout, which, is not something that happens regularly, certainly. But we love to start the season with that and get as many people in there. And then Sunday is also pacing really well. I would recommend getting out there and getting your seats. We have plenty of great packages that save you a little bit of money as well. Right now, today, there's a flash sale going on for all October games outside of the opening game. So, as I mentioned, we have 6 games in October. So the other 5, you can start at $10 to grab yourself a seat. So go to our website, TucsonRoadrunners.com, and you can grab some seats via that flash sale or through Ticketmaster.com and being able to get your seats for this weekend.
Love it. One more segment with Bob Hoffman for the Tucson Roadrunners coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Bob Hoffman on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, and I believe we still got Mr. Bob Hoffman on the line from the Tucson Roadrunners. Can you hear me there, Bob? We may have lost Bob here briefly for a moment. So, Bob, if you are there, call us back on in, and we will get you back live here in the studio. We were talking Tucson Roadrunners hockey. I love local sports and love the opportunity that we've got the Roadrunners having their home opener this Saturday, 7 o'clock at the TCC, and, of course, on Sunday at 4 o'clock. We're big fans, and you should be big fans, too, because we're celebrating 10 years of Roadrunner hockey, and I think we've got Mr. Bob Hoffman, president of the Roadrunners, back on the line. Bob, you there?
Yep, I am here. I am here, Grant.
Sorry for losing you over there for a second, Bob. Hey, I wanted to talk Phoenix hockey here with you for a second. Do you think that there's an opportunity for NHL hockey to return in the next 5 years in Phoenix, or is it just completely dead and buried?
No, I'm a believer. I'm in the camp that I believe it is going to happen, and that it will be back in the state of Arizona. The NHL, the product has never been better. It's never been more followed. It's become so global. All the television rights deals that are out there and the accessibility to the sport has never been better either. So with the growth happening like that, there's just no reason in the world that a top market like Phoenix, won't get a team back. They've run through the same challenges, and the NHL has been very vocal about this that led to, unfortunately, the Coyotes selling and having the team go up to Utah. It all stems from having a place to play the NHL and really the sports world in general has become so, hyper-focused on the venues and those opportunities and what it does in driving a community as well as giving great opportunities for jobs. And, it's one of those things that until there's a plan in place that, has a permanent place that NHL team can reside and call home, it's just not going to work. And the arena that the Suns play in is not hockey conducive. It's something that would have to be really overhauled quite a bit to be able to support an NHL team at a high level. That's, I think, those logistics that are being worked out. I do know there is a task force, a committee that's looking at, how to take those steps to make sure hockey stays in the mind of Gary Bettman and the NHL for when expansion does come, which I've heard, there could be a couple of teams expanding in the next 2 to 3 years and then another couple of teams a couple to 3 years after that. So I do think we'll see within the next 5 or 6 years the NHL jump up by about 4 markets, and if Phoenix can get all their T's crossed and I's dotted, I do believe that the NHL wants that as a market, and there's no reason in the world with 5 million plus people that can't support an NHL team. So I do believe it'll come back.
Yeah, it's shocking to me to think that the Phoenix market, one of the largest markets in the United States, could not support an NHL team or a proper stadium, that we ended up playing at the Mullet Arena, while certainly a special experience to see NHL hockey in a 5,000-person arena. That just can't be a profitable experience for the team.
No, it was challenging for sure. And it was supposed to be a short-term, solution. That's why the NHL approved it in the first place. And I think that the Coyotes team and staff did an unbelievable job of making that experience truly unique. And, but from an NHL perspective, and you think of, from a player perspective, they owe an awful lot, to trying to make sure that experience is fantastic for them as well. And I think once several arena opportunities became more and more challenging that looked like it was going to stretch a little bit further in time, and that it wasn't something that would be completed in 2-3 years, and it looked more like 5+ years, that's where the path was made to sell the team and relocate them to what was probably at that time looked to be a better situation with a true NHL facility, or at least some of the construction and renovations happening at the Delta Center in Utah are making it even more of a hockey venue. But that's what the NHL was after at that time.
No, without a doubt. Arenas are incredibly important, even more so than they were a decade or two ago. Mm-hmm. And when we've got facilities that are 30, 40, 50 years old, they're just not necessarily competitive in today's market, when there are new markets willing to construct from brand new luxury suites and stadiums that have the food and beverage capacity and the parking and all the things necessary to make a business like that profitable.
Yeah, and it's funny, Grant, people see it a lot of times, and I know, when you look back to some of the struggles the Coyotes had, there were people on one side of the argument, if you will, or at least of the issue, that looked at that as this isn't going to benefit me, and that's just what we need, another sports stadium. Phoenix has so many of these, all with different purposes, and I think what gets short-sighted in that, your point's a great one, that there's a lot of money and revenue and dollars that flow through these facilities, but how big they are for the communities and that they're in, and how big they are for the jobs that they provide, for the tax money that keeps the roads great, and that is able to really be pushed into infrastructure. And you look at that, it has a positive impact for everybody in the community. It's not something that just caters to the sports fan or the person that might follow the Roadrunners, the Coyotes, or even up in Utah. So sports arenas are obviously I'm biased and I'm a fan, but they're fantastic for what they do to the community and what they provide, even those that don't take advantage of utilizing them. And here in Tucson, that's what we've always wanted to make sure we did in our time here. Through 9 years, it was a number one strategy from day one, is we want to make sure that the community and that people understand the impact that we can bring in a good way, whether they're hockey fans or not. Nothing really gets me more proud when I talk to people, and sure, I'd love that they come to 100 games in the past few years, or became a package holder, a season ticket holder. But even if they tell me that they haven't been to one hockey game, but they understand the importance and close to $5 million of economic impact driven right to the downtown area through hotels and hospitality, and that keeps people employed, and that helps put tax dollars and money here down in the TIF district in people's to make them well, to have people and the well-being of what they receive from the services in the community, because every town has its issues in trying to bridge those gaps and getting the funds that they need. And a sports team and an arena specifically can certainly help aid that.
So what can we do as Tucson fans of both the Roadrunners and Tucson in general to help preserve our hockey team over here? We've got 2 years left on that lease. And, there's no secret that there's concern that when that lease expires, that the team may move to one of Mr. Marullo's new facilities in Reno, Nevada. And obviously you work for the team, so I can't ask you to divulge anything from inside information. But what can we do to show our support to potentially prevent that from happening and keep the Roadrunners here in the old Pueblo?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the path has been paved in my mind, and I tell people this when I'm asked that question, Grant, and it does come up quite a bit. And You know, it's been paved that Tucson is maybe many people 9 years ago didn't believe it, or they didn't totally buy into the fact that hockey in the desert could work. But the path has been paved, and hockey does work. And there is a fan base that supports the Roadrunners, that supports hockey. We've seen youth hockey grow leaps and bounds with the junior Roadrunners, seeing record numbers of youngsters playing. You see the new facility being built 10 minutes south of downtown there at the Mosaic Quarter. There are so many things that show that hockey works here in Tucson, and the Roadrunners have been such a significant part of paving that, that regardless of ownership or if a team in one iteration may move, I truly believe hockey will never be without, or Tucson will never be without a pro hockey team. There will be a team here, and it may come with a different look, a different size, a different shape. But I do believe that the credit should go to the fans here in Southern Arizona and building this as a hockey market. And what everyone can continue to do, in my opinion, Grant, obviously we need that support from the business community. We need that support from the fans. Come out to games, get involved, be a part of what we're doing. Tell your neighbors, tell your coworkers. And the business community is a big one, too. I tell you, it's funny. We run into a lot of people who are appreciative of what we do and who have nothing but great things to say about what the Roadrunners do and the importance and significance that it's made in Southern Arizona. But at the end of the day, they don't really support that with anything of their of any finances they have. They don't support and being able to say, hey, we're going to make sure we keep sports here in Tucson. And you mentioned big picture even of it, Grant, and that's so important for this market. There's no reason and all the struggles and, you know, bumps and bruises that Tucson's taken in the past, that's in the rearview mirror. And too many people, I think, live with that and they're waiting for when the shoe falls and they're waiting for when the next bad thing's going to happen. And some of the news recently of just some of the hurdles that have come with the approach to try to bring more baseball stuff happens and the world's imperfect. And you look at it and you're like, you know what? Tucson's established itself, but now it's up to the community to go out there. You've got to go watch FC Tucson and you've got to go watch the Tucson Sugar Skulls. You've got to go out and support all the baseball initiatives that are coming here, because if you don't, and if the business communities don't step up to support that, that's when the teams leave. And it has nothing to do with Tucson not being a sports market or a great sports facility, great facilities here. Has nothing to do with that. It has to do with dollars and cents. And if it economically can't work because that support's not there, that's when markets lose teams. There's absolutely no reason in the world that Tucson should ever have to experience a team leaving like that again, or a sport leaving like that again, as it's established itself and this community has showed it can rally. But it's easy to say it. There's got to be action and you got to do it.
Without a doubt, we've all got to step up to help support the local sports scene here in Tucson if we wanted to continue and not just have everybody pack up ship to the bigger city just to the north of us. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll take one more segment with Bob Hoffman. I want to ask Bob some questions about international visas of players, a hot topic. Certainly when we think about the Tucson baseball team is more interesting local sports talk coming up with Grant Krueger and Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners, when we come back after the break. Welcome back to the final segment of the Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger, and we've got one more spot with one of my favorite guys in Tucson, and certainly with one of my favorite teams in Tucson, Mr. Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks, Grant. Kind of you to say.
Hey, we're just excited that you guys are here in Tucson. And when I think about local sports and hockey, I think of the international players that we have in both the NHL and in the AHL as well, too. You've got a lot of foreign-born players over there. And that kind of hit the top of the news cycle last week in Tucson when the Tucson baseball team suddenly announced that they didn't have the proper visas to work inside of the United States as professional sports athletes. Without getting too deep in the weeds, I was wondering if we could talk about what kind of visas your players have and what that process might look like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was interesting in reading that and seeing it, because I'm a bit old in the tooth and have been doing this a long, long time. And, you know, 20 years ago, part of the role that I played with the organization I was with at that time dealt with all their immigration and making sure that everything was processed with the federal government to make sure players were able to come in. And, you know, there are a couple of different status visas that we're able to take take advantage of. One called an HB1 that, you know, has it's like a visitor's visa that they can come in for a set time frame. The U.S. government in Canada has always worked very closely with that in hockey, and it's a very thorough process, but it's one that with the checks and balances and with the legal entities that are a part of assisting with that, you have to make sure that you do everything by the book to get all that approved in time for players to come to training camp or to be here, whether it's annually, year round, and they don't have to go back to Canada, whether it's to tag up or even to stay for any amount of time, that they're able to stay and maintain their residence in the United States. And, I'm sure it's very similar for businesses that, have chefs that come from overseas and different other, roles and jobs. And you hear the federal government and the current administration talk about that quite a bit of, all the great value that can come from the immigration process. But, there is a set a rule book, if you will, and you have to follow that to the T. Now, I have no idea, and I'm not insinuating anything was done in error from what's happened with the baseball team. And I'm hopeful and sure as all Tucsonans are that it'll get fixed and we'll be able to celebrate with them on what that will look like here in Tucson. But it is a process and it is something that from documentation, different background materials you have to provide from the players. I would have a file on each player that was 20 pages deep that I would have to submit to immigration to secure that visa. And then, there's standard processing time as well with those that, those days it was 3 to 5 months even it took sometimes to get that clearance. So there are ways that you can expedite and have, rush processing and some different, payment opportunities and options you can do to kind of rush certain things. But I've had it more than once in my career, Grant, to where that immigration has popped up and been a problem for a player we've acquired in a trade or somebody that we may sign that, it sometimes gets lost in the shuffle or that particular application you think is at the top of the pile and somehow it gets buried under a couple of dozen and doesn't get to in time. And we've had players that have had to sit out a game or a player that might have to kind of be on pause for a couple of weeks until that immigration gets approved because you can never have a player, an illegal player that gets onto a roster or actually gets on the ice or on the diamond that is not approved to work in the United States. So it is a process and it's one that can be costly. It can be time consuming. And it sounds like some of the issues with, just the current climate that we're in and maybe some of the timing of those processes for the Tucson baseball team there have changed a little bit in the government and in the administration to where it's slowed it down. And that seems to be the problem they're having is it's a waiting game. I'm sure they've done everything that they needed to do. And now it has to be approved and they've got to be permitted to have the guys work in the United States and earn money in the United States.
No, it's such an unfortunate challenge for the Tucson baseball team, whose opening day should have literally been tomorrow as well, too. Like, what a terrible loss for the local community. I've always felt our government seemed to be pretty open to professional athletes. As a hockey fan, I remember Sergei Fedorov defecting from Russia like overnight at the Goodwill Games in Seattle. And suddenly, hey, you're a U.S. citizen and here's a work visa. Amazing how this all worked out, seemingly in a very short period of time. And it really makes me wish that something like this could happen for the Tucson baseball team as well.
Yeah, me too. And it's funny because you mentioned that. It's like I've had 100 conversations with people in immigration areas over the years. And it's as funny as probably like anything you would call to order or anything when you're dealing with in customer service, if you will. A lot of it matters on who you get, right? And there's been people that I've gotten that are huge hockey fans and know some of our players. And it really feels like things may be expedited or things aren't challenging in that way. I don't think anything's done untoward that are doing anything out of school with it. But you then may get somebody who's as tough as it is, like having a bad day, right? Or that is going to slow down that process and just not be as efficient. And a lot of times it just comes to which agent that you end up dealing with and which worker kind of gets into that process, which I think's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day as to how to fix some of that. But unfortunately, I'm sure it doesn't help the great ownership group of the Tucson baseball team and all their plans they have. But, it might just be dealing with the wrong people. It's unfortunate.
Without a doubt. Well, we're wishing them a tremendous amount of luck in getting that fixed so we can enjoy opening day for baseball. But remember, this week we get to see Bob and the Tucson Roadrunners for opening day for hockey. This Saturday, what time's that game, Bob?
It starts at 7 o'clock, but we've got a red carpet to watch the guys come in for opening night beginning at 4, a tailgate party that begins at 5. So come and enjoy the evening, be a part of downtown Tucson, and be a part of the Roadrunners opening night on Saturday.
Love it. Thank you, Bob, for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Mr. Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners. And thank you, listeners, for also spending part of a two-hour period of your Wednesday with us over here on The Morning Voice. Looking forward to bring you great news and talk next week as well. Thank you all, and enjoy it, and go see those Roadrunners.